Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, best-selling author of the book, The Fitness Mindset, and Rewire Your Mindset, here to help you by deconstructing expert guests in all things health, fitness, and mindset. And today, we have a whopper of a podcast. Dietitian Amanda Nybert on sustainable weight loss, breaking the all-or-nothing mindset, and why macros matter. I've been following Amanda for quite a while now on Instagram. She puts out great content, very much a tell-it-like-it-is, doesn't pull any punches and just breaks down the misconceptions online. And in today's podcast, we jump around on all things nutrition and mindset. So breaking that all or nothing mindset, how small daily changes lead to big results, why macros matter and why they matter even more than calories based on the context, carbohydrate cycling, the role of exercise and weight loss, underrated fat loss tools, the might as well thinking and resetting, and 80-20 eating and working through your guilt around food. Again, Amanda puts out incredible content online, so I'm really grateful we got to connect on today's podcast. If you have a weight loss goal, if you have a fat loss goal, if you have a body composition goal, if you're interested in diet, nutrition, and food, or you want to just get your mindset right so that you can hit any body composition goal you have, this is the episode for you. So without further ado, here's dietitian Amanda Nybert on sustainable weight loss, breaking the all or nothing mindset, and why macros matter. Enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm delighted to be joined today with my guest, Amanda Nybert. Amanda is a registered dietitian and fitness enthusiast with a passion and purpose to empower others who want to get back on track and take control of their health. Over the past 18 years, Amanda has gained knowledge and experience that has helped her guide more than 34,000 people in their weight loss and wellness journeys. With her custom lean program, range of coaching services, and multiple shop offerings, she has cultivated a brand that focuses on giving you the leading tools and resources to help you reach the best version of yourself. Her goal is to provide the most current, cutting-edge nutritional techniques that not only provide results, but are also sustainable for life. I'm looking forward to talking all things weight loss, nutrition, and sustainability in today's episode. Amanda, welcome to the podcast.
I'm so excited to be here.
You and me both. Amanda, I love your Instagram page. You put out such great content and you don't mince words. I was watching a video you did, a reel recently on, I can't remember, something that the doctors were recommending, one of those weight loss pills, and I was just in stitches. I was like, yep, that's Amanda's personality coming across here in this reel. And we're going to unpack a lot of different topics today. But before we do that and we dive into things like the all or nothing mindset, talk to us a little bit about your backstory and what kind of got you into the world and health and fitness, and you know, down your road of helping so many people over the years.
Yeah, so growing up, I was a competitive gymnast, really interested in fitness and wellness, went to college, decided to get my degree as a dietitian, and actually spent about 16 years in the clinical setting, working with patients in the hospital with diabetes and hypertension. And I approached my 40th birthday and I kind of sat myself down and said, you know, I'm either going to be kind of doing the exact same thing, making the same amount of money, saying the same thing for the next 20 years, or I'm going to do something different. And it was at that moment 4 years ago that I decided to jump in this online space of health and wellness and kind of created a little side hustle that exploded with my signature program, Lean, Living Energized and Nourished. Was able to leave my full-time gig at the hospital about 12 months later. And I've been doing this ever since. And what I found, and I think what made me so successful in this space, is that we just overcomplicate nutrition, health, and wellness. And my real goal for people that follow me on social media and the clients that I work with is simply to, you know, simplify nutrition, to make it easy and doable on a daily basis.
Why do you think nutrition becomes so overcomplicated, nutrition and wellness in particular? Do you think it's the amount of abundant information that's out there, not having the evidence to support it, and just everyone's ability to say whatever they want online? Or why do you think there's just this amount of information out there that confuses people when it comes to nutrition?
You know, honestly, I think the bottom line is that people want a quick fix. So the industry is always looking for that quick fix because, you know, we all know that weight loss is a $1 billion industry. And so we're always looking for the latest and greatest. But at the end of the day, it's all about foundational work. You know, it's all about, you know, just eating whole food nutrition, being active, making sleep a priority, reducing your stress. So, you know, kind of the unsexy things that come about with health and wellness. And the problem is that a lot of people will implement those foundational approaches. And when they don't see really fast results, they give up. And so they turn to really, you know, quick fixes, like I mentioned in that Reels, the liquid program, the Optivia program, where, you know, you drink shakes for, you know, 6 weeks. And sure, you're going to lose 30 pounds if you're just living on, you know, liquids and packaged food. But in the long run, those types of, you know, programs just are not sustainable and they don't support, you know, our daily life.
When it comes to sustainability, then, Amanda, what do you think is the number one? I know there's so many things you mentioned there, sleep, stress, nutrition, moving more, all of these things. But if you had to put it into an order of priority, what would you say is the number one thing people need to do when it comes to finding sustainable results?
You know, the more and more I work with people, the more and more I see that sleep and stress is a huge issue right now. You know, we live on our phones, we stay up late at night watching Netflix. You know, the world is very stressful right now. And I feel like those are two things that we could all, you know, make a commitment to do better with. It's, you know, free to try to improve your stress. It's free to try to improve your sleep. And for so many people, that seems like achievable, you know, trying to get your diet in order, trying to get to the gym 5 days a week can sometimes feel overwhelming. So sleep and stress would be the first place that I start.
When it comes to sleep and stress, do you find that when people focus on that, they're alongside some basic nutritional principles, their adherence to the nutrition goes up? Again, from my experience and people listening to this podcast, a lot of people will know that, you know, whole foods as much as possible and, you know, allowing a sustainable approach towards your favorite foods and not eliminating everything or following restrictive modes of dieting. You know, keto diet's one that comes up a lot. Great for endurance athletes, epileptics, etc. Terrible, in my opinion, for weight loss in terms of the restriction that the way that it's based in terms of the removing of macronutrients.
All or nothing.
Yeah, that all or nothing approach. Do you find then that when people look at their stress and sleep, that their nutrition adherence goes up? And we will unpack that all or nothing mindset, because this is what I associate with you when I think of your content and definitely want to dive deeper into it. But with sleep and stress, do you find that people's adherence goes up? Or is it a case that you have to start with the nutrition, get their education right first, and then look at their stress and sleep?
It is absolutely a snowball effect, period. You know, when we're better, when we're well rested, we're more energized. When we're more energized, you know, we have a pep in our step. We're probably less stressed. You know, when you feel better, you eat better, you know. So it's all of those things. I definitely absolutely think that it creates such a snowball effect. I was working one-on-one with a client recently, and she found herself, you know, doing really good for 2 or 3 days. And then would kind of fall off the wagon and overeat and on sugary high carb foods, you know, chips and cookies and candies and things like that. And, you know, for about 4 months, we went through this cycle, like, what's triggering this? Like, let's get it out of the house and, you know, all of these things. And finally, we realized that it was her sleep that was really triggering these off days. When we started really tracking the quality of her sleep, we noticed that the nights in which she got really poor sleep, maybe she had a hard time falling asleep, maybe she woke up multiple times, she didn't get enough sleep, the following day was really hard to adhere to her diet. She had much higher sugar cravings in the afternoon when her energy levels would sink, and she would use that sugar as kind of like a quick energy source. So again, I think that people underestimate the importance and power of, you know, optimizing your sleep and, you know, that stress response.
Yeah, that's definitely one of my triggers when it comes to not adhering to what would normally be my standard nutrition. Talk to us about the all or nothing mindset, Amanda.
Yeah, you know, in the hospital setting for 16 years, I worked with, you know, weight loss patients, and I would, you know, work with a patient for years and years and years. And over time, you know, they'd come in and they'd be all in, all focused and, you know, doing all the things, seeing great results, kind of go off out on their own. And then 6 months later, they'd be back struggling with the weight regain. And over time, you know, I even tried different dietary approaches. You know, in the beginning, it was low fat, low calorie. And then, well, let me, that's not working. So let me switch to, you know, low carb. And we did that for a couple of years. And then it's like, oh, that's not working. Let's do keto. And we did that for a couple of years. And what I finally came to realize is that it wasn't the diet failing. It was the person and their ability to implement the diet in a sustainable, consistent manner that failed. And what I saw is the reason why people fell off track the most was this all or nothing mindset. The thought that if I can't be perfect, then it's not worth doing anything at all. And I saw that over and over. And I think, again, a lot of people see, oh, you know, I've got to eat right. I've got to exercise. I've got to sleep. I've got to avoid alcohol. You know, they list all of these things that they need to be doing. And January is always a very prime example of when people kind of go all in. And January and February, yes, you might be able to do it all. But as summer rolls around and, you know, football season rolls around, there's all these instances that make doing it all a lot harder. And so people find it's now because of summertime and sports and activities, I can't get to the gym as much. So since I can't go to the gym 5 days a week, then eating healthy is not going to help. So when I started to really focus on teaching people the number one reason why dieters fail, which is the all or nothing mindset, and showing them ways to identify that they fall into that kind of, you know, negative thinking, and then teach them strategies to, you know, break that mindset, is when long-term success really occurred.
What would be an example of an effective strategy for working through that all or nothing mindset?
Well, for example, breaking the might as well thinking. And let me give you a scenario here. You walk into work Friday morning and there's a box of hot fresh donuts sitting in the kitchen. And you try really hard to not eat the donuts because they do not currently align with your health and wellness goals. But you give in. You end up having one, two, maybe three. After it, for so many people, an event like that triggers the might as well thinking. Well, might as well, you know, have nachos for lunch and pizza and beer for dinner because I've already blown it. And for others, because it's Friday, it turns into might as well just eat like an asshole all weekend and start fresh Monday. What people have to realize is that one, two, even three donuts that you had at breakfast did not make or break your progress. It's what you chose to do after that meal that did. So I always say the next time you find yourself at the end of a meal that doesn't align with your current health and wellness goals, instead of saying might as well, make every effort to reset immediately. And when we learn to reset immediately, we're able to create that consistency that we need for long-term success. So that's one tip right there.
Yeah, that might as well thinking, that we have similar language. You, I know you say you might as well, you, on your profile, you have don't eat like an asshole, which I love. You know, my equivalent to that is don't press the fuck it button. You know, fuck it, I've eaten a donut now.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. Yes.
Similar message. It's reset and go again. Do you find, Amanda, from your years of working with people, that some people find it considerably harder to shift out of that mindset and some gravitate towards it very quickly? What's your kind of experience with that in terms of time frame for people? Because again, you've been working in the nutrition industry much longer than I have, you know, although I've been working with people for 10 years, you're well past that in terms of the amount of people you've helped. And I find that some people really struggle with it, that reset mindset. Other people adopt it very quickly once you tell it to them and give it to them. What's been your experience? Do you find that some people really struggle making the shift and others get it quickly? Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, I would say more people struggle than not. Because, you know, changing your mindset does not happen overnight. And, you know, maybe the first time you're real dialed in and you say, I'm not gonna, you know, say might as well. I always tell my clients, think of me, you know, at the end of the meal, the minute you hear yourself saying might as well, think of me. But in the long run, it is challenging. Some people really adopt the concept very quickly because they've never been given the ability to not practice perfection, you know? And I see that, like, for example, when my clients, they'll go to their doctor and physicians and they'll have, you know, again, diabetes, PCOS, Hashimoto's, they need to lose 50 pounds. And doctors just don't have the time to spend with patients to help them, you know, truly make sustainable lifestyle changes. So the easiest thing for them to do is to give them a quick fix. Oh, do the low carb diet. You'll be great. You know, you'll lose a ton of weight, your blood sugar will manage. And so they leave there and they think, okay, I'm going to do this low carb diet. And so they think, in order to be successful, I can never eat carbs again. And that ultimately 100% sets somebody up for fail, because it's impossible to say that you're going to live on a low carb diet for the rest of your life. Hello, Thanksgiving, Christmas, Halloween, you know, Cinco de Mayo, chips and salsa. So, you know, when you teach people this approach of 80-20, which is another tip that I have for people struggling with the might as well thinking, 80% of the time you're, you know, dialed in with your health and wellness, your nutritional choices, your exercise, you're doing the things that you know you need to do 80% in order to feel your best. 20% of the time, you're doing whatever the hell you want, you know? And if you can really adopt that flexibility in your life, then again, you see that morning of donuts as your 20%. You're not beating yourself up, because it has a place in your lifestyle. And for people that really adopt that concept, 80-20, you know, dropping the might as well thinking, they do phenomenal, because it takes the guilt out of foods. You know, I always say there's no forbidden foods. In my program, you can eat whatever you want. There's just foods you eat 80% of the time and foods you eat 20% of the time.
Yeah, I love that. The analogy I use for people is that, you know, there's no good or bad foods, that the context matters. Like a broccoli is not going to save you from a burning building, and a chocolate bar is not going to stab you down a back alley. Like, you know, the context really matters. When it comes to that 80-20, which again, I'm a big fan of that approach, particularly for weight loss, I think it's such a sustainable thing for the majority of people, because you're not restricting your favorite foods. How do you, or what's your process, Amanda? I know it's a bit of a Pandora's box question, because it depends on the individual, but for those who are struggling with the guilt around those 20% foods, where they've got these foods in the bad category, the forbidden category, and they can't wrap their head around, well, I can include these within the calories and macros for the day, etc. How do you get them to shift? What's your process for that, or what's your wording to those people in terms of getting them to not demonize that 20% of food, so that they can actually have that sustainable approach?
Yeah, and I love that you mentioned macros, because I do teach a macro management style of, you know, nutrition education. I'm sure your listeners know macros are short for macronutrients, carbohydrates, proteins, and fats. And I think that when people get away from only understanding calories, and they understand that the makeup of your calories probably matters more, then they have the ability to see, oh, I can have those donuts and they actually fit my macros. Now, obviously, we know that there's a whole dietary approach of if it fits your macros. And I mean, I think that there's a place for that, but I'm not a huge fan of, you know, eating Lucky Charms all day just because it fits your macros. I think that there is, you know, an issue with food quality that impacts your overall health. But at the end of the day, when you teach people, you know, what's an appropriate amount of carbohydrates for weight loss? You know, what are the macronutrients that matter most? Protein, you know, optimizing your protein intake. And how important is fat in that, you know, relationship to, you know, carbs, proteins, and fats? Then again, they see that you have the ability to make everything fit. When you start a morning out with donuts, you don't get to end the day with pasta and breadsticks. You're going to have to kind of pivot. You're going to have to, you know, make some adjustments in order to, you know, make up for that high, very high, large load of carbohydrates first thing in the morning. So when you learn that flexibility of, you know, manipulating your macros and understanding what you specifically need, then that's when you see all foods fit.
Yeah, I think when it comes to macros and calories, now this is a little bit of a what's more important, your heart or your brain question. But in terms of order of importance, Amanda, would you say macros then are more important for people to focus on than calories when it comes to sustainable weight loss?
Well, you have to be in a caloric deficit for weight loss. I mean, there's no ifs, ands, or buts around it. So, I mean, if you're eating 3,000 calories and your macros are perfect, well, you know, you're probably going to be in trouble. But Yes, I do feel like within an appropriate caloric intake, the balance of your macronutrients is far more important than total calories. I don't know about you, but what I see chronically, I work more with women. I do work with men, but chronically, we don't consume enough protein at all.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I think that's one of the approaches I take generally. And again, it's very similar to you, Amanda. It depends on the person, but focusing on that calories and then protein being the primary macro that in your major meals, breakfast, lunch and dinner, having a good quality protein source in there, eggs for breakfast, you know, maybe some chicken for lunch, maybe some salmon for dinner, assuming you're not following a vegan based or a plant based diet. I think it's just one of those, it's like a low hanging fruit.
And here's the thing, the thing with protein goes back to what I said in the very beginning. People are so paralyzed with fear over protein because there's so many mixed messages in the media, in the nutrition space about it. It's the most polarizing macronutrient. Everyone has a lot to say about protein, you know, mainly where you consume it from. But nobody's talking about how adequate protein is so important. You know, we get really wrapped up in too much protein, which is kind of almost not a thing for most people. And we get too wrapped up in kind of where our protein source comes from. And so I always tell my clients, you know, I don't care where your protein comes from, whether you grow it in the ground or if it comes from a mother, we all have the same protein needs. We all need adequate protein.
Yeah, as you said, macronutrients, it's a topic I love talking about because there's so many different, you know, as you said, when calories are a lot more straightforward, in order to lose weight, you need to be in a caloric deficit. How you get there then depends on the method or strategy you're using. Macros goes into a whole host of other realms. You know, we touched on protein. You did touch on fat there. I'm curious, because I know you've mentioned this on your social media platforms, Instagram in particular. Are you a fan of carb cycling then when it comes to people on weight loss and fat loss plans?
Yes, I love carb cycling. And I'll tell you, across the board, when you look at all the nutrition research, and we know nutrition research is so flawed in so many ways, but there are plenty of, you know, studies that show low fat, low calorie diets promote weight loss. And there are plenty of studies that show low calorie, low carb. So what we know when we put all of those studies together is what we know is that it doesn't matter as much where your carbs and fats fall within that caloric deficit. It matters most about the deficit and the adequate protein intake. So I do use a concept called carb cycling where we do.
Can you explain that just for the people that may not be familiar with that term? A lot will have heard of it, but just so people have a kind of a grasp on the front end.
Yeah. So again, carb cycling is where you cycle between, or my version of carb cycling is where you cycle between, you know, low carb eating, which is 50 net carbs or less. And I say regular carb. Some people will say high carb. Here's the deal. High carbohydrate intake is what is driving every disease condition as well as obesity around the world. So the average American eats 400 to 500 carbohydrates. That's not good. That is super problematic. But what people don't understand is the difference between high carb, which is not good for our overall health and weight loss, versus low carb. They don't realize that there's like that middle ground. So I do low carb days, 50 net carbs or less, and then I call them regular carb days because I don't want people to understand that 150 to 200 carbs is not high carb. That's like adequate. Okay. And so you transition between those, and I give out just very general, you know, 150 to 200 carbs. Obviously, if there's a lot of men, they're going to have more, you know, probably up to 250, maybe more. Macros are very specific to each individual. I'm sure your audience really knows that. Showing people that they can eat 150 to 200 carbs, especially women, a couple of days a week. We usually do those on the weekends when we are having pizza and beer and chips and salsas and desserts and alcohol. And then cycle them with some low carb days throughout the week, you know, maybe Monday through Thursday. It creates that balance. Absolutely. We know that insulin is a really driving force for fat storage. So anytime that we can manage our insulin levels really low, we're burning more fat. So that's kind of the benefit of those, you know, of that kind of low carb diet, those couple of days of low carb eating. Again, the problem with low carb diets is they're not sustainable. So people are either eating no carbs or they're eating all the carbs. So what I love about carb cycling is it makes it sustainable. On the weekdays, you drop your carbs. On the weekends, you allow yourself more and you're still able to see progress on the scale.
Yeah, and if you're somebody that works off kind of mathematics and numbers, like 150 grams of carbs is about 600 calories. And if you're eating 1600 calories a day, that's a portion of your overall caloric intake. Yes. On a fat loss plan, which actually isn't that much. When people, and again, the carb phobic, and there's definitely people listening who still have that, a lot of rewiring of the mindset needed for how people approach carbohydrates. But just to back up what you said there, Amanda, I think it's a great tool for people. I'm curious, you've been working, you know, more than 16 years with patients and people, and between your programs and in clinic, etc. What are some of the most frequently asked, or what is one or the two most frequently asked questions that come into your social media, into your Instagram in particular? Or is there one that comes in more often than others? Would I say that? Is there any question that jumps to mind?
Well, I think because I talk a lot about protein and the importance of protein for health, wellness, and weight loss, I get a lot of questions of what's my protein needs, you know? And, you know, just to give you my answer, again, everyone's needs are different. And I always tell people, you're going to need at least 50 to 75% of your current weight in protein. So if you weigh 200 pounds, you're going to need, you know, at least 100 to 150 grams of protein a day. And I think that when you put it in that perspective, and again, when you tell someone they need 150 grams of protein, they freak out. They're like, oh my gosh, that's a lot of protein. That's a high protein diet, Amanda. But protein is definitely relative to your size. It is such a myth that, you know, everyone should be eating 60 to 80 grams of protein, especially men. You know, their protein needs, men that are working out, are going to be even higher than that. So that's probably the number one question that I get. And a lot of times I'll have people that have set up their macros, who knows where, probably in MyFitnessPal, which puts everyone at 1200 calories. It's so frustrating. And they'll say, oh, well, I set up my macros and my protein doesn't meet that recommendation, the 50 to 75% of my body weight. And I say, and my response is, your calories are too low. And that's a huge mistake that I see, again, especially women making, is that we underestimate our caloric intake. And when we underestimate our caloric intake, we underestimate the most important macronutrient for weight loss, and that is protein. So sometimes it's a matter of increasing your caloric intake so that your protein needs actually match where you should be.
And I think a massively underutilized tool there is people forget about their metabolic rate, that if you're particularly exercising, which will tie me into the next thing I want to ask you about, that if you're exercising and you're not meeting your protein requirements, that lean muscle tissue you build is going to increase your metabolic rate. You're going to burn more calories throughout the day. And 1200 calories is just too low for most people. Like there's very few people, Amanda, I'm sure you're the same, that need to go to 1200 calories in order to lose weight.
Yeah, I mean, I say unless you're under, you know, unless you're 5 feet or less, then you have no business eating that low. But that's what people think. You know, they go to their doctor, here's your 1200 calorie diet. And it's, you know, again, a chronic issue of under eating, but more so because I will always tell my clients, you know, let's say I set up your calories at 1800. I say, you don't have to eat 1800 calories. You can. You can have up to that and still lose weight, but you have to eat that minimum protein goal every single day. You know, so again, protein is that one macronutrient that I make my clients consume. And my strategy, I think protein optimization is also extremely important. You know, you can't save all your protein for dinner and think that you're, you know, going to do well. I mean, I think that's another common misconception is there's a lot of, you know, another common question I get is, oh, well, I heard you can only absorb 30 grams of protein in one sitting. Well, that's bullshit. Okay. It just doesn't work like that. So I always tell my clients to have a good understanding of what your optimal protein is for each meal. Take your protein goal and divide it by 3. Because I suck at math, let's say your protein is, you know, your protein goal is 90 grams. That means you need 30 grams, you know, at each meal. So again, spacing out protein throughout the day, I think is another concept that not a lot of people are talking about.
Yeah, that 30 grams of protein for everybody in one sitting is one of my biggest pet peeves when it comes to nutrition.
Yes. Oh my God.
Especially for probably
people that follow you and look like you, you know? I mean, your protein needs are probably through the roof. And if you could only eat 30 grams of protein at each meal, you'd have to eat like 12 hours a day.
Yeah, exactly. If I put that rule of thumb onto my sister or onto my partner who are half my size, I'm like, it doesn't even make sense logically that we'd have the same needs and requirements. But again, standalone nutrition advice without context is a really tricky thing to unpack on the internet. But with that, it kind of gives me, because that's one of my pet peeves. And from following your content, Amanda, I know that prescriptions of chronic undereating by doctors and even unregistered nutritionists and people who are just kind of offering advice on the internet. Do you have any other particular pet peeves online that you see that are particularly irksome to you?
You know, just that's definitely a big one. But I think just people that are really pushing kind of like, this is the only way, you know, because at the end of the day, all diets work. It's really finding the way of eating that fits your lifestyle. There's not one, you know, plan that's best for everybody. And yes, I'm sure there's so many people out there that are hugely successful eating low carb every day, as well as eating keto every day. So I think it's good that there's, you know, a variety of options out there. But to say that there's one plan that's best for everybody is just false.
Yeah, we're so in alignment with that thinking that this is the only way philosophy, because it's about what you stick to consistently over time and different things work for different people. I do want to jump back because I do want to pick your brain on the role of exercise, because protein gives me that nice little tie-in, because when we think protein, it kind of merges sometimes in my head with exercise, more so from the recovery based on my bias and my background. But when it comes to the role of exercise, how important or unimportant is it when it comes to weight loss?
So I say diet's 80%, and you may not want to hear that.
No, I completely agree, for what it's worth. I have some of my clients who don't do any gym work. We hit a step count target and we focus on nutrition. So I'm all on board. Sorry, continue.
Yeah. Okay, good. So, you know, you can't out-exercise a bad diet. And I think a lot of people use their, you know, inability to exercise, their despise of exercise, their lack of time to exercise as an excuse to not do anything. Again, I'm not going to see the best results because I'm not exercising. Well, that's absolute baloney, because the bulk of the effort comes down to what you're eating. Now, so I always focus on that first and foremost. You know, people that aren't doing structured exercise, I'm like you, focus on activity, movement. I'm wearing a continuous glucose monitor. It's called a CGM, and it, you know, tracks your blood sugar continuously. I'm doing it with about 50 of my clients right now. And one of the most powerful things that we've learned with regards to blood sugar response is the power of movement before and after a meal. So you can sit down to a very carb heavy, you know, probably not the best, you know, laid out meal. And if you eat that and then you go sit in the on your couch, you have a much higher blood sugar response. And we know the higher your blood sugar, the more insulin you produce. The more insulin, the more fat we store. So it's, you know, a snowball. Whereas if you eat the same meal and after dinner, you go out and you take even just a 10 to 15 minute walk, it reduces your sugar response by anywhere from 20 to 30%. And for some people, that's huge. So understanding that simple movement, getting up every hour, walking around, all of those things have such a huge impact on your overall health. So don't undervalue, you know, step count. Now, if you're at a place where you're working out, I cannot stress the importance of strength training. And I think that people have, for many reasons, but one of the reasons why people tend to gravitate more towards cardio, especially women, are these damn Apple Watches. We are now obsessed with calories burned. And so we think that when we go for a run, when we get on our spin bike, and we see that we burn 300 to 400 calories, 400 to 500 calories, that type of workout is superior to lifting weights, because when we lift weights, we only burn, you know, maybe 100 to 300 calories. And this is just so false. Obviously, as we age, the reason why our metabolism reduces for all people is sarcopenia, the loss of muscle mass. So maintaining or building a healthy muscle mass is going to help you sustain your weight in the long run. And it's going to help you sustain a healthy metabolism. Stop blaming your hormones in your age on your, you know, crappy metabolism. Body composition plays a huge role in that. So I always tell my clients, you know, if you only have the ability to work out, you know, two or three times a week, I would prioritize strength training versus cardio.
Yeah, I think strength training, something that people fail to see sometimes, and hopefully long-term listeners of the podcast will know this already, that the analogy I like to use for strength training is like making money while you sleep. Like if you're yes. strength training, yeah, you're burning calories at rest, you're increasing your metabolic rate, and that alongside, you know, cardio, alongside step count, alongside moving more, all of that has a very positive snowball effect, compound effect towards body compositional change. And it's just putting in these tools. Now, also very similar to you, Amanda, if I have somebody who just hates training, hates the gym, the thought of it gives them anxiety, I'm like, okay, step count, we'll move more, you know, focus on standing more throughout the day, getting on your feet. All of those things add up, particularly with the fat loss goal, where your nutrition and being in that caloric deficit is going to be the most important thing anyways. All the moving is doing is supporting that caloric deficit. I'm curious as well, you know, one of the excuses people will use, and you mentioned earlier, is, you know, I'm not going to see the results because I'm not exercising. What are some of the other excuses that you regularly hear from people?
You know, I don't like vegetables. I don't like to cook. I don't know how to cook. I don't have time to cook. I can't afford to eat healthy. You know, my kids are picky eaters. Those are the big ones.
What's the one that is the easiest to fix that's the most commonly heard?
You know, I think that people overcomplicate healthy eating. I will tell my client, listen, if you go home and you boil some pasta and you brown some ground beef and you open a jar of sauce and you steam a bag of frozen broccoli, that is a healthy meal. Just the action of, you know, cooking at home, the action of, you know, creating that protein, carb, and vegetable balance, the action of sitting down at the table as a family, those are all healthy attributes. You know, I had a lady reach out to me and she's like, I got in a bind tonight. I made chicken tetrazzini to my family and I didn't know what to eat. So I drank a protein shake. And I was like, what's wrong with chicken tetrazzini? Okay. You got your protein, you got your carbs, maybe add a big salad, add a vegetable. There's your healthy meal. Like, we need to stop overthinking healthy eating. So I feel like when I teach people that, like, you don't have to, you know, radically change what you're serving your family or what you're serving yourself. You don't have to radically change the types of ingredients that you're buying, your, you know, food budget. You just maybe have to make little tweaks here and there in order to, you know, get those macros in balance. Then they're like, okay, I can do that.
What do you think is an underrated fat loss tool, Amanda, outside of obviously sleep and stress that we talked about earlier? What do you think is an underrated fat loss tool?
Whole food nutrition. I mean, just loading up on, you know, fruits and vegetables and adequate protein. I think people villainize fruits because sugar and carbs, and I think people underutilize them. You know, I tell my clients, listen, if you're craving sugar, eat a ton of fruit. Because at the end of the day, your body's really craving those micronutrients, the vitamins, the minerals, the antioxidants, the fiber. And so when you consume these foods that are very high in nutrients, then those sugar cravings go away and you don't have to eat as much fruit. So again, unlimited amounts of vegetables, quality protein, fruits, kind of those whole foods, I think is really underrated.
I embarrassingly have to put my hand up here. Years ago, when I used to compete in bodybuilding, Amanda, I was the anti-fruit brigade because of the sugars. And I look back now and I cringe when I see anything that I've ever done where I'm like, avoid fruit, it's full of sugar. I'm like, oh my God, no, it's not. It's full of nutrients.
Oh, trust me, I was there too. Yeah. But it's just once you start to see that it creates that, it feeds into that all or nothing mindset, you know, where people restrict, you know, sugar, fruit, and then on day number four, instead, they're in a bag of Skittles.
That was me. That's what's so funny about it. I would literally be like, oh, I can't eat fruit, you know, and then I'd be binging on ice cream 4 days later because I had such a bad sugar craving. Now I'll just have an apple or a piece of pineapple and I'm like, all right, I'm good now. With that, Amanda, I know it was something that I think we've all had that form. Well, I won't put words into your mouth or anybody else mouth, but those kind of misconceptions along the way. But is there anything else that you've changed your mind about in recent years? Fruit was one for me, obviously, and taking a more holistic approach. And I would have also been that coach that was a big fan of the training style and what you did, as opposed to, well, let's find what works for you. Do you like the gym? Do you like to strength train? Do you want to hit a step count? What works best for you? What's something you've changed your mind about in recent years?
Well, I mean, everything in terms of, you know, cycling through all the kind of, you know, fad diets, even these kind of medically presented dietary approaches for specific, you know, disease states, until I kind of went through them all and realized that, you know, these types of very specific, restrictive, all or nothing diets just lead to long-term failure because of the inability to consistently follow them. So I'm constantly evolving, you know, constantly learning, educating myself. I think the nutrition science and, you know, that field is ever changing. I think that with wearables and, you know, different discoveries, we're able to, you know so much more about how the body functions and how it works. So I always tell people, you know, I'm going to tell you what I know now and what I'm personally doing now, but I can't guarantee that a year from now, it's not going to change.
Yeah, I love that. It's just constantly questioning your own best love ideas because new research comes out, more experience of working with people. I love that approach. When you mentioned fitness wearables there, which a question I wasn't going to ask you, but I am curious, is there any particular area of health or wellness or fitness that excites you at the minute? For example, one that excites me is because I have a little bit of another pet peeve with sleep trackers on watches because of their inaccuracy for the most part, but I am excited for when they are accurate, which I think they will be. I think it's just a matter of time. Is there anything in fitness, health or wellness that particularly excites you at the minute?
Well, I mean, I've been wearing an Oura Ring for 4 years. I think it's probably one of the more accurate wearables out there because it does a continuous tracking versus an intermittent tracking like your watches and stuff. So yeah, sleep is powerful. I mean, it wasn't until my Oura Ring that I realized how negatively alcohol was impacting my sleep and recovery. You know, I would just have, you know, one glass of wine at night and didn't even, you know, feel buzzed or did not feel like it impacted my ability to go to sleep or stay to sleep. But boy, did my numbers suck after that. And seeing that, you know, visual representation of how my body reacted, you know, after alcohol or, you know, a stressful day or whatever is really powerful. I mean, it gives you feedback that you can implement. The other wearable, which is very far down the pipeline with regards to accessibility, is a CGM, the continuous glucose monitor. You know, I've got 50 clients doing it right now, and the aha moments that you have and what you can learn about your specific body's response to the foods that you eat, stress, you know, when I work out, my blood sugar spikes, when I go in the sauna, my blood sugar spikes. I can see even, you know, an afternoon when I had a really stressful day, I can see changes there. When I had poor sleep, I can see changes there. So I think that technology is just invaluable that I hope someday soon all people have access to. That's the feedback I've gotten from my current clients. They're like, man, everyone should be able to wear this for 4 weeks because it would be life-changing.
Yeah, I love that. And I feel I need to get myself an Oura Ring now because I've had Ben Greenfield on the podcast telling me exactly how good it was as well. So now that's two of you that in a short period of time, I'm like, okay, right, I need to get my
it's
Oura
superior.
Ring.
Superior.
Yeah.
And the new one just came out. So there you go.
There we go. I'll definitely, when I get it, I'll take a photo and I'll tag you in it for sure because this is the Oura Ring. And thank you for that. Amanda, I just have one final question. And I've loved this conversation. As I said, I'm such a big fan of your Instagram page, the way you put across content, particularly because you don't mince your words and it's very much you that puts it across and you cut through the misconceptions, and you have quite a large following on Instagram. For people listening to this podcast, I highly recommend, if you have a weight loss goal, if you're looking to cut through the bullshit online, go follow Amanda's page. There's so much on there. But Amanda, if you could have access to everybody on Instagram who has a weight loss goal or a fat loss goal, and you could put out one post that hit absolutely everybody on the planet, the billion people potentially with that goal, what would you say?
Always do something. You can never put your health and wellness completely on the back burner. And if you wake up every day with just the intention of at least doing one healthy thing that day, then you are on the right path.
Amazing. Such a fantastic way to finish. Amanda, I've loved this conversation. I love your message. We're very much in alignment with what we promote and what we preach. So I'm so glad we got to have this conversation. For everybody listening, where's the best place for them to connect with you? Is it Instagram? For those of you who want to check out the Lean program, where's the best place to send people to potentially work with you or just follow you online?
Yeah, I put out, like you said, a ton of content on social media, Instagram, Amanda Nybert RD. I'm actually on every platform, TikTok, Pinterest, YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn. And then I have a website, amandanybert.com, where you can learn about my 7-week signature program called Lean, which stands for Living Energized and Nourished.
Amazing. Yeah, you have that omnipresence covered for sure. When I was doing the research across the other platforms outside of Instagram, I'm like, geez, Amanda's on everything. And for everybody listening, I will link those on the show notes on briankeenfitness.com and in the description for today's podcast. So click on through, follow the Instagram page, go check out her program if you think it's a good fit for you, and follow her on any of the platforms that you think you will consume the information best. Amanda, keep doing what you're doing, keep inspiring, keep up the awesome message, and thank you so much again.
You're so welcome. So great to be here, Brian.
Told you it was a whopper of an episode. Dietitian Amanda Nybert on sustainable weight loss, breaking the all or nothing mindset and why macros matter. We packed so much into that episode. Again, definitely one that might be worth saving and going back on one or two more times with a notepad and pen. Love this conversation. Looking forward to doing my 3 takeaways from this podcast. Every Thursday, for those of you signed up to my newsletter, I send out my top 3 takeaways from each week's podcast. So I'm looking forward to diving into this one. A lot to take away from this one. So to subscribe to that, just head over to briankeenfitness.com, scroll on the homepage, and just pop your email into the newsletter section on that page. And every Thursday, you'll get my top 3 takeaways from that week's podcast. That's everything from me for this week. Catch you all next Monday.